Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Lid Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Francesca, and for this episode we have Ben Renshaw. Ben Renshaw is one of the world's most sought-after leadership coaches and speakers, working with C-suite executives in FTSE 100 companies, including Coca-Cola, Heathrow, IHG, P&G, Sainsbury's, Sky, and Unilever. His previous books include Purpose, Lead, and Super Coaching. His latest book, Being, The Six Principles for Leading in an Age of Fast Change. He blends six principles with compelling calls to action. We can become governed by our to-do lists and forget that we are human beings, not human doings. Doing is important, but it's not why we exist. As a leader, the risk of being dominated by doing can cause you to lose touch with the essential qualities required to provide great leadership. So the six principles in Being, they draw upon engaging stories and rich insight from interviewing C-suite leaders across a range of sectors, revealing the core few truths of what it is to lead in an age of fast change. So Ben, why do you think we've been so governed by our to-do lists individually and at work, and especially in the way people lead? Why is this so important to address?
Oh, look, it's an important question, Francesca, and very much at the heart of the book. If you were to discuss this with neuroscientists who study the brain and how the brain works.
It's fascinating because they've identified what's known as autopilot. And autopilot, we all have it. It's a real friend. It's a part of the brain that saves us time and energy. But apparently, we are having to process about 11 million pieces of information in any given second. That's a huge amount of data to try and manage. The conscious mind can only process about 50 pieces of data in a given second. So what we do is we do a mental shortcut. And that's very much self-preservation. And it really helps us function. But as a consequence of that, we are operating on what is familiar and what is comfortable. And for the majority of people, they are wired to do. They are wired just to be action-orientated and get stuff done. And that literally will start from the moment you wake up. And you will have thoughts like, you know, tea or coffee. Yeah. You know, what meetings have I got today? Where do I need to be? What have I got to wear? How am I going to manage it all? Already, just you're beginning to be consumed by this to-do list right from the outset of your day. That is your autopilot that's driving that. Now, as I said earlier, it is a friend because imagine having to consciously or deliberately process and work out how are you going to do all this stuff? How are you going to wake up? How are you going to move? How are you going to have a shower? Nothing would happen.
Sounds exhausting.
It is, absolutely. However, the challenge, though, is when your doing erodes your being. In other words, that you become overly mechanistic, overly transactional, overly task orientated, and I see this all the time in my work as well as experiencing it personally. We can get ground down by doing. And at the end of the day, I firmly believe that we are called human beings, not human doings, for a reason. And if you neglect your being and the quality of your being, you are at risk. No amount of doing is going to make up for any lack of being. And it is the quality of your being that determines the quality of your existence. So the heart of my book, Being, is really a call to action for people to pay attention. How are they being? How do they want to be? And if there is a gap, close the gap, so that your life is truly an expression of your authentic being.
Yeah, I think we can get so governed by, as you said, sort of the autopilot that actually we forget to ask ourselves those questions. It's almost that zombie state that you kind of fall into. It can be quite easy.
Completely. And really, my invitation to people is at the start of the day, because I'm a great believer in just keeping it simple, making things practical, but just at the start of the day, ask yourself the question, how do you want to be today? Not how do you want to be at the weekend? How do you want to be on a holiday? Obviously, as we're speaking at the moment, you know, in a global pandemic, how do you want to be once coronavirus has gone away, once we've hit a new normal? No, how do you want to be today? And by paying attention and putting your focus on that, you create what's called new neural pathways in your brain. So again, brain scientists have discovered that our brain has neuroplasticity. In other words, we can actually create new thought patterns. We can change the way we think. And by putting your attention on how do you want to be and making that a conscious choice every day, you can change the nature of your reality.
I mean, I could talk about brain patterns forever, but we need to talk about the book as well. So let's kind of get to it. I mean, the book being, it's split into six different sections. So there's being humble, being present, being adaptable, being connected, being curious, and being inspired. How did you come to establish these particular six elements? And why do you think that these six are kind of the key to leading in fast change? It's a big question, but...
I was very fortunate in the book in that I had the opportunity to interview and speak with a lot of really fantastic, inspiring leaders, such as John Holland Kaye, the CEO of Heathrow, and Keith Barr, the CEO of IHG, and people from a whole range of different sectors, including professors at Harvard University. And what really came through to me was there were some common themes. There were some common elements through all my conversations, as well as all the research I've done over the last 20 years, working with organizations and coaching and developing thousands of leaders. And as you say, look, there's multiple kind of being states that you could call out. But when I really, really dissected and thought long and hard about if I were to arrive at six principles, what would they be? What would be those fundamental? Humility for me is the starting point. Yeah, if you show up in today's world arrogant, thinking that you know it all, thinking that you've got the answers, you will be history very, very quickly. Firstly, nobody knows. Nobody has the answers. We're seeing this obviously massively played out now. And I think again, when on a political level, when you see supposed leaders showing up with arrogance and that they think they know, it's genuinely offensive. Being present, again, one of the hardest challenges I would suggest is being in the here and now. Most people spend most of their time, you know, fast forwarded to tomorrow or reflecting on the past. And so, but being present is where your power lies. Being adaptable, yeah, again, the unprecedented amount of change and the speed of things means that we have to adapt and into new ways of being. Being connected, relationship is at the heart of everything. If you don't have that connectivity around you, you're not going to survive. You're not going to make it. Being curious, again, we don't have the answers. We need to have a learning mindset. We need to have that insatiable appetite and curiosity in order to overcome all the challenges. And then finally, being inspired. What gets you out of bed in the morning? What drives you? What energizes you? What motivates you? These are the really big questions that we need to be asking.
In your experience, are there any of the six that you find people struggle with the most, or is it quite individual to different people?
Look, it is individual. I would suggest I probably, if you really held me to it, I would say being present is probably the hardest. And I think that's where, as an example, it's quite interesting, the popularity of something like mindfulness in today's world, where, you know, you've obviously got apps like Calm, which now has, you know, over 100 million users, and they are, I think it really captures the attention that people have become so distracted. And, you know, genuinely, people's mental health is at risk. And if you're living on fast forward all the time and you're constantly distracted and you can't focus and you can't pay attention, that has very serious implications. So I would say that probably the most challenging one is the ability to simply be present.
And I think it's interesting, actually, that we sort of consider those mindfulness apps and practices for our personal life, but the concept of being present isn't necessarily talked about in leadership and in a professional sense.
Although that is changing. So my experience in organisations, I have, for example, in working with Heathrow. So I ran a couple of programmes for them, one on how to really get the best out of people. And part of that program was a module on mindfulness. And we developed over 1,000 leaders to really develop techniques and skills to be mindful. So I do see, and you know, there's many organizations, obviously the big ones like the Googles, Facebooks and Nikes that, you know, have mindfulness, really put a lot of attention on that. So I'm seeing a lot of changes in that way. In fact, one organization I worked with recently, the chief financial officer, who is probably one of the most traditional people you would ever have met, actually sent round to his whole team an article on mindfulness that had been written in the Financial Times. So I'm really seeing people are challenged with this. They're taking it seriously. And there's far more open-mindedness about different concepts and tools to help.
That's very encouraging to hear. I mean, we've slightly covered it, but are there any sort of obstacles that you find that stop leaders adhering to these six? Perhaps maybe it's time, perhaps maybe it's just an unawareness. Where do you see like leaders usually coming short, and what usually are the reasons for that?
Look, I think you really hit it there when you talked about lack of awareness.
Okay.
My experience, and you can call me very naive, but my experience is that on the whole, the majority of people show up for work wanting to do a great job. And therefore, if their performance and if the translation of that intent of doing a good job is not coming through, there'll be interference or something in the way. In fact, there's a hypothesis which is very much at the heart of my work, which goes along the following lines, that performance is equal to potential minus interference. In other words, that if somebody is not realizing their potential, then there'll be some interference, there'll be some roadblocks and obstacles in the way preventing it. And very much, you know, the intent behind my work is to help people realize, recognize that interference and then reduce and eliminate it. So just to bring that to life, you know, I was coaching a leader who was on succession plan for a very senior role in an organization. And he was technically very, very accomplished at what he did. However, he'd gotten some 360 feedback, which was not pretty. And in particular, it really called out his lack of empathy. He was renowned in the organization. People would say, look, whatever you do, just avoid this individual on a Friday afternoon, because if you wanted to have a good weekend, just make sure you are well out of his way. Anyway, I got wheeled in by HR to meet with him and explore a coaching relationship. He was not happy to see me, but he couldn't really avoid the fact that this feedback was in writing, and if he didn't address it, it would have severe implications for his career development. He was ambitious. He wanted to progress. But when we began to really look at this concept, this idea of empathy, he had a total blind spot. Yeah, he genuinely thought that he cared about people and that came across. He genuinely thought that he listened to people and really sought to understand. He genuinely thought that he came across with encouragement and trying to get the best out of people. So it was a real wake-up call for him, holding up the mirror and him recognizing that was not the case. So we came up with three really, really simple behaviors for him to demonstrate, which would be clear evidence of him showing empathy. Number one, listening to understand. You know, so often people listen to reply. They listen to be right. They don't listen to genuinely put themselves in other people's shoes and understand their reality. Number two, check for understanding. So actually part of his practice then was to, rather than just go off on a tangent with his own point of view, was to really come back and summarize and play back to the other person to ensure that they were on the same page and he had interpreted what he was hearing correctly. And then thirdly was just to ask the question, how can I help? And again, rather than just coming in and making assumptions about the type of answers or solutions he could provide, to really ask the other person, how could he help? And by putting in those types of behaviors, it really helped him overcome the obstacle of lack of empathy. And actually, that was the game changer for them in terms of really him becoming a better leader.
Wow. I mean, also, I mean, performance is so often equated to kind of like the tangible KPIs and results. And maybe rather than sort of looking at that, we need to kind of shift our focus and also include those kind of personal elements. I think there's so often you're kind of graded on performance in terms of, you know, how many numbers you've hit, what are the sales, how much engagement did you get on that social post? And actually, if we go back and sort of rethink about the way we are employees and the way we're leaders, maybe we need to kind of change that mindset to include a personal element in our KPIs as well.
Look, definitely. And you know, enlightened organizations where I'm working, this is the case. So most companies that really understand this now measure people 50-50. So it's 50% of their performance is measured on the what in terms of their tangible deliverables, and 50% is on the how in terms of their mindset and behaviors. An example, I'm working with a wonderful chocolate company in San Francisco at the moment, and the CEO, he's passionate about being purpose-led as an organization. And he's put that at the heart of their strategy. And what he has done, he's implemented in terms of their performance this year, that the biggest objective for everybody is what they call develop self and others. And so everybody has to have, as part of their whole performance mechanism, a clear objective about how are they going to develop themselves and others. And they're all engaged in ongoing conversations in terms of what that means and what that looks like. And it's really, really shifting the needle and the culture of how they want to be as an organization.
Out of interest, I mean, they're kind of non-tangibles. How do you measure that in terms of when people are doing performance reviews?
Yeah. But there's various measures. I mean, three ways that they're measuring it. Number one is that they are part of a whole survey called Great Place to Work. So it's very much in terms of the environmental factors, and that's primarily measured through engagement. Okay. So the primary way most organizations will kind of turn that intangible into a tangible is through engagement. Secondly, then, they're doing it through pulse checks. So they're taking regular pulse checks on a consistent basis to not wait until the end of the year to find out what's going on, but really putting that in place in the here and now. And thirdly, they put a big emphasis on community. And so they're making it very tangible in terms of their contribution to the community. And they've got a whole range of different initiatives in place to really do good in society.
Brilliant. Sort of talking more about the six principles, is there somewhere that the leader should start with them? I mean, maybe addressing which ones they're slightly weaker at, or is it, if you intended it as sort of a gradual chronological process where they all have to come together to be really effective?
Yeah. Look, we're human. My experience of being human, and one of the principles is humility, is that I can only really do one thing well at any given time. So the invitation in reading the book is, I think that, look, everybody's in a different place. And I think what's really helpful is, as you read it, what resonates, what stands out for you. The question that I would be asking myself in reading the book is, what's going to make the biggest difference for me today? And therefore, as a consequence of that, I mean, I actually had somebody just text me this morning, just flagging the principle about humility and just saying, this is where I need to start. So some people will kind of recognize that that's a real call to arms for them. Others maybe at this time being inspired is the most important thing. They're feeling de-energized, demotivated. They may be, you know, just absolutely suffering from Zoom fatigue. You know, they're fed up of working from home. They want to get out. They need inspiration. So, however, my big encouragement, wherever you start, is stick with it. You know, this is not like a 6-day menu where you go, oh, great, this week I'm going to, you know, address all principles and by the end of the week I'll have mastered it. No, I mean, for me, it's a lifetime journey mastering something like leadership and to become, you know, brilliant at humility and being present and adaptable and connected and curious and inspired. Genuinely, you've got many, many years ahead. However, what I'd love to think is that by really wholeheartedly embracing these principles, you will enhance the quality of your being and therefore your life.
I mean, talking a bit about routine, is there a way that you go about it in terms of working it into your schedule or sort of sense checking daily? Is there something that you do that you think works in terms of making it that routine?
Yeah, look, again, this is very personal. So anything that I say here, I caveat in terms of, look, this is what works for me.
Sure.
So I have a whole variety of different routines and practices that really support me in doing my best to live the principles. Now, that starts with prayer and meditation. So every day I start with my mindfulness and I consciously set my intention for the day in terms of how do I want to be and what does that look like. I will then make that more tangible by really beginning to evidence for myself in a day. How will I know? So as an example, inspiration, that's probably one that's very, very close to my heart. But I recognize, particularly in my role, that in order to inspire other people, I need to be inspired myself. So therefore, I really challenge myself, you know, what inspires me and what prevents me from being inspired? And so I have, again, part of my routine is daily exercise. It energizes me. It makes me a better version of me. Learning and development is absolutely fundamental for me. Every day I need to be challenging myself, to be learning, to be curious, and to be looking at things through a growth mindset. Also, the interactions that I have with other people. I have a very supportive network around me of people that know and understand me and really can challenge me to be a better version of me. So I think what's really crucial here is to develop your own kind of suite of resources, whether it be you know, the practice of mindfulness, whether it be your exercise, whether it be nutrition, the people that you surround yourself with, you know, what you read, what you listen to, taking walks in nature, doing fantastic work that you love. It could look like anything, but experiment, be curious, and find out what works for you.
Yes, we've all got to go and start trial and error now and work out some routine.
Absolutely, and have a little fun along the way.
Exactly. Sort of going, sorry, back to your point about, you said to inspire other people, you need to be inspired yourself, which I think is quite an important point, sort of thinking about leadership definitely comes from the top down, and actually to have employees that are kind of following these principles to create a better organization, it often needs to come from the top down. It's much harder to sort of look up to and be inspired by a leader that isn't following these things. So I think, yeah, it's a really interesting point you say.
Look, I agree, Francesca, but a couple of points on that is, don't wait. You know, if you were to wait until, you know, if you're, as an example, if you're working in an organization and you'll say, look, I'll be inspired when I see my leaders be inspiring, that might be a long wait. So I appreciate that, yes, obviously it makes life easier, you know, if you do have leaders role modeling and being the example that you'd love to see. But absolutely do not use that as a reason to not be your best self, to not be inspired yourself today, to not be present today, not to be curious today. Yeah, everybody's human. And for me, part of that means we're all, you know, we've all got a shadow side. We make mistakes all the time. Every day we fail to live up to our intent. That's just part of being human. Now, obviously, if you have awareness of that, that's really helpful, because then you can be very humble about it. You can share your vulnerability and people really resonate, connect with that. But again, it's a big ask of people and it takes a lot of learning and development. And also what I noticed is that often in the past, you know, the more senior you got, then often the more closed you became. Obviously, that as a trend today, that is history. And as a leader, if you genuinely want to progress as a leader today, you know, you have to be absolutely willing and prepared to stand in your vulnerability and be your authentic self.
Which is quite a terrifying thought, but no, definitely necessary. And yeah, you're right. It is becoming something that is being adopted so widely now, which is great news.
Yeah, and you know, and again, with the recent events that we've seen in terms of racism and, you know, Black Lives Matter, and you know, the enlightened CEOs, the aware leaders are coming out with voice. They're making it personal. They're taking a personal stand. They're being very clear that they're also on a learning curve. They are not perfect. They've made mistakes. We're all in this together. And I think that's a very important message.
Definitely. I think the brands that have kind of come forward and been accountable for previous ways they've behaved or represented people has gone down so much better than people that have ignored it. And I think it's very interesting to see.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Well, just to wrap things up, where can people find you and information about the book Being?
Yeah, so look, people are welcome to visit benrencher.com, but my suggestion would be just to jump onto LinkedIn and meet me there. Be great for you to hook up. You know, I do daily postings. That's really the medium through which I communicate. So I do daily videos and little ideas, and it would be just fantastic to engage with you there. I'm genuinely really curious to understand your experiences, where you're at. Love to get your thoughts about the book. And so I really look forward to meeting you there.
Brilliant. So everyone get in touch. Thank you, Ben, so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Francesca.
And thank you also, everyone, for listening. Don't forget, keep an eye on our social media at Lid Publishing on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram for more information about new books like Being, experts' opinions and podcasts with people such as Ben Renshaw. So thanks, and see you next time on Lid Radio Podcast.